Okay, so now instead, I'll start with a maisa. First of all, it's I think the shiur today is zecher to the zecher nishmas to my uncle Yossi Yitzchak Ben Reb Shalom Deiber, who is a very special person. I'm not going to say now anything really drushes about my uncle, but when I was asked to give a shiur on his yard site, I didn't have a lot of options because he was very dear, a very close uncle, and anything we do for his chus is for me a chus as well. So I want to start with a maisa, a story. Anyone heard of the great chassid Reb Mendel Futterfass? Anybody? Reb Mendel Futterfass is one of the great chassidim of our generation. Thank you so much. The literal term of a Baal Mesiras Nefesh, right? Today, Baruch Hashem, to be a Yid is easier in most situations. But back in communist Russia, to be a Yid, to be a from Yid, Torah Mitzvahs and Shabbos and Kashrus and Chinuch, was Mesiras Nefesh, literal Mesiras Nefesh. And many people were, when the communist government began, so many of the Gdeli Yisrael and from Yidden just left Russia because it was impossible to be a regular Shemir Torah Mitzvahs there. But millions of Yidden couldn't leave. And the Friedrich Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak, also Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak, Olav HaShalom, and he decided to stay. And he said, it's our job to keep Yiddishkeit going in Russia. And he sent hundreds, maybe thousands of chassidim to the four corners of Russia to teach Torah, to make chadarim and yeshivas and mikvois and shuls. And many of them were imprisoned and many of them were killed. But that's what they did for Yiddishkeit. So one of these people was Reb Mendel Futterfass, and he was a chassid of the Friedrich Rebbe at the time. And he actually was newly married, maybe a child or two, I don't remember. And his wife and child or two got out of Russia, but he decided to stay further in order to help Yidden with their Yiddishkeit. And ultimately, he was arrested. And he was, I think, 9 years or 8 years that he spent in jail until he was freed and came to first England, then America, then Israel. And he became the mashpia of the Lubavitch Yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael. Anyhow, I had the very good fortune in 1993 to go as a shliach of the Rebbe to that yeshiva in Kfar Chabad, so that I got to know Reb Mendel Futterfass. He was older than me, about 70 years, but we were good friends. I mean, he was almost 90 and I was almost 20. And I would spend a lot of time in his house and talk with him. So I remember it was one time, it was a Friday night, and I said, Reb Mendel, I said, everyone here understands Yiddish? Not so much. English is better?
Yeah.
Good. So I said, Reb Mendel, could you tell me a story about when you were in jail? Just something. So Reb Mendel said, you want to hear? Okay. Fine. So he says like this. He says, so I was in jail, and it was before Pesach. And one of the things before Pesach always, for those chassidim in jail, is that they were very, very concerned, would they get matzah? Because it wasn't necessarily illegal to have matzah in jail, but you'd have to get it. So your wife or a chassid or someone had to send the matzahs. And the Russian guard who was there, who typically wasn't a great Jew lover, had to let it in. So there's a big concern, would he get matzah for Pesach or not? Since we were very worried, a week, 2 weeks before Pesach, and Baruch Hashem, was right before Pesach, and matzah arrived. Baruch Hashem. But then I thought to myself, says Reb Mendel, that okay, I got matzah today, but who says I'm going to get matzah next year? After all, I have a long prison term here. So I decided to put away, take a part of it for now, for this year, and put away a part for next year. So, okay. So that's what I did. I ate part of the matzah and I put away part for next year. And then, so I'm listening, just like you're listening, and Remendel like starts smiling to himself as if he said a joke. So I say, Remendel, what's the joke? So he says, where do you think I put away the matzah? After all, a Russian jail looked something like one cell, and in that cell was 10 criminals, goyim, and me. And there's no shelves, and there's no cubbies, and there's no lockers. And it's always a hunger in jail. So where you put down the matzah for a minute, it's gone. So where did I put the matzah? I said, that's a good question. Where did you put the matzah? He says, I held it. I said, yeah, for how long? For a year. Until the next Pesach. Sometime in my right hand, sometime in my left hand. I wrapped it in paper, sometimes I put it under my shoulder, armpit, whatever, and I held it. And I never put the matzah down for a year for next Pesach. Now, but even if you're going to hold something, and I'm thinking, like, try to hold something for 10 minutes or 15 minutes, you get tired, 20 minutes, a half hour, an hour, just keep on multiplying, a day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days. And then it says, but once a week, even in a Russian jail, once a week, they took them to be showered. Where do you put the matzah down for the shower? Can't take it into the shower with you. So he says, well, so for that he devised a plan. Every day from the food that he got, he gave part of it to the biggest, strongest criminal in the jail. And that was his payoff, so that when he goes in once a week for the shower, he held the matzah for him. And that's how it was a whole year until the next Pesach. So I said to Mendel, and what happened before next Pesach? Did matzah come? So yeah, matzah came. That was a story that he told me. So I remember a couple of weeks after that, a couple of weeks later, and I came back with my younger brother. And I said, Mendel, could you tell over the story with the matzah? I want my brother also to hear the story with the matzah. So Mendel says, fine, he said over the story. And remember, my brother is like, his jaw drops and goes like, wow, that's Mesiras Nefesh. And Mendel says, Mesiras Nefesh? You got it. That's doing a mitzvah. You got to do a mitzvah. You have to make sure you do a mitzvah. That was his attitude, remember. So the question is that Mesiras Nefesh or is that not Mesiras Nefesh? To hold something for a whole year because maybe I won't be able to do the mitzvah properly next year. Maybe I won't have, maybe I will have. So somehow Remendel didn't see it as Mesiras Nefesh. For most of us, that's like crazy. So I was once sitting by a Fabring with some friends, and someone suggested, he says, what if we change one word in the story? Instead of matzah, say it's a priceless family, what's it called? Heirloom, how do you say the word? Heirloom, like a diamond bracelet or necklace or whatever. And a person's in jail and they hold on to it always. Does the story suddenly start making a little sense? Now, if it's so precious and so special, say you hold on to it no matter what, right? No matter what, then it sort of makes sense. So the question just is, how do we look at a mitzvah? Because if in Remendel Futterfass's mind, a mitzvah was as precious as any priceless, precious gem or ruby or family, whatever it is, that's every mitzvah of Hashem. So in his mind, it wasn't special, Mesiras Nefesh. He was holding on to it because what else would you hold on to it? So maybe that's why Remendel didn't see it as such Mesiras Nefesh. But then the question is, so how do we get to there? How do we start appreciating every mitzvah in that way to have that level of dedication and devotion to a mitzvah that no matter what, to hold on to it, even though sometimes it's more comfortable, sometimes it's less comfortable. Anyways, that's a ma'isa from Reb Mendel, a Pesach Tikka ma'isa that I heard from him, but it's not, what is it now? Ayin Tes, 25 years ago, 26 years ago maybe. But that's a first-hand story from Reb Mendel. Okay, let's learn a little Tanya, at least a Tanya concept. So you said we should talk about Pirik Mem Zayin. Maybe we'll get to that. But let's talk about an earlier place in Tanya, which also talks about Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that is, you said you're in Chavtes or Lamed?
Chavtes.
Okay, so Nachal Chavtes is a story about the Meraglim. I'll go on to Pirik Lamed Aleph. Okay, so a little bit ahead of where you are. Pirik Lamed Aleph. The Alter Rebbe brings there an interesting pasuk that it says about Yetzias Mitzrayim. It says, Ki barach ha'om. What does barach mean? Escaped. Exactly. The word in Hebrew for escape is bricha, barach. The pasuk says, Ki barach ha'om. The nation escaped from Mitzrayim. Anybody remembers where in Chumash it says, Ki barach ha'om? Who's marking here? Huh? I'm sorry? What do you mean earlier?
No, never mind.
You're talking about Shevet Ephraim?
Yeah.
No. I mean, Shevet Ephraim's leaving is not mentioned in Chumash. Oh. It's mentioned in other places, but not in Chumash. So the pasuk is about Yugad L'melach Mitzrayim Ki Barach Ha'om, when Pari started chasing them. after the whole Yitzias Mitzrayim, 7 days later, you have the story of Kiryas Yamsuf. So there the Pasuk says in the beginning of Parshas Bishalach, Vayugad Lemelech Mitzrayim, it was told over to the king of Mitzrayim, Ki Barach Ha'am, that the nation ran away. They escaped. And therefore, Parai decided to run after them, and that led to the whole story of Kiryas Yamsuf. Now the question is, why is it called an escape? What does escape typically mean? When you escape? When you like go out the back door when nobody's looking? The Eden didn't escape from Mitzrayim. The Mitzrayim sent them out of Mitzrayim. There was 10 Makis, and then there was Makis Bechiris, and then Parai came and said, leave. So why is leaving Mitzrayim called a bricha? Why is it called an escape? Anyone? I'm asking a pshat question, not a deep question, a pshat question. The Pasuk says that Yetzias Mitzrayim is called a bricha, an escape. And the question is, why? We didn't escape. They said leave.
They forgot that they said leave.
They forgot? Okay.
They pretended
to forget? Okay. But still, the Pasuk says, ki barach, it's good answers, but that then the words ki barach ha'am is not really true, which is okay, because maybe the Mitzrayim said ki barach ha'am. But it doesn't sound like that. It sounds from the Torah that the Torah calls Yetzias Mitzrayim an escape, a bricha. Any other answers? This is something that if you think about, you can get it on your own.
Could you say?
What?
We were talking about it. I said, could we say? We didn't hear it from him.
Of course we could say. Anyone? Excellent. That's the answer. That is the correct answer. Because really, we just said, Moshe Rabbeinu tells Pari, we want to leave for 3 days. So even though there was 10 Makos and there's Makos Bechiris, and Pari says, okay, go. But he really meant go the way you asked, which is 3 days. And then after 3 days, we didn't come back. So that's what the pasuk means in the beginning of Bishalach. Vayugad lemelech Mitzrayim ki barach ha'am. Pari was told that no, these guys, they left. They're not coming back. They ran away. They said 3 days, but they're gone. That's what it means in pshat, and you were 100% correct. However, that pshat brings up a question. Question is, why did they have to do it that way? Why did Moshe Rabbeinu have to tell Pari, we're going for 3 days, and then run away? After all, who was in the driver's seat? The Yidden or Pari at this point? Right? There's one Makkah, and a second Makkah, and a third Makkah, until Makkah's Bechiris. Pari is on the verge of death, and he knows that. Pari himself is a Bechir. So whatever they said, whatever they would ask for, they were going to get. So here's a big question. True, you said correctly, it's called a bricha, it's called an escape, because they said we're going for 3 days, and then they ran away. But the question is, why did it have to play itself out in that way? Why, Taka, did it have to be that Moshe Rabbeinu tells them one thing, and they do something else, and then there's an escape, and then they run after them? Why couldn't Moshe Rabbeinu tell Pari, we are leaving forever? Good riddance. We were here 210 years. Genug Shein. We're out of here. You don't like it? Okay, get ready for Makkah number 11. Right? So we were in the driver's seat. Why did we have... The question is understood? Now that's a good question. That is the Alter Rebbe's question in time. I don't know if the other Mefarshim answered this question. I don't know because I didn't research it. But the Alter Rebbe asks this question and gives a very fascinating answer. He says the following. We have a klal. Everything that happens begashmis, everything that happens physically, is a mirror, is a reflection of what's going on beruchnius as well. Everything that happens in this world, we see one end, we see the mirror, we see the bottom part of what's going on. But all of this is reflective of something much deeper and much greater that's going on as well. And the same is with Yetzias Mitzrayim. On a very simple level, on a very gashmis physical level, what happened? We were a slave nation. We were in bondage by the Mitzrayim, and we left. We went out of slavery, we went out of bondage, and we came to Geula, which is amazing, and we celebrate that every year. All of that is true, but all of that is only one level and one realm of what was going on. There was something much deeper going on at the same time, which was a ruchnius tiki yitzias Mitzrayim. What does that mean? We weren't just a slave nation to slave masters who worked very, very hard. We were in a ruchniyistika Mitzrayim, and we were in ruchniyistika slavery. What does that mean to be in ruchniyistika slavery? We have a nefesh elikis, we have godliness, we have holiness within ourselves, and we have the thing that enslaves our nefesh elikis. And that's a nefesh bahamis, or a yetzer hara, or midas rois, whatever name you're going to give it. But all the negative things that go on, that they can enslave our ruchnias, our nefesh elikis, our desire to be good, our desire to be holy, our desire to be proper and do what we're supposed to be doing, our slichus in this world. And all of that can be in Mitzrayim by the negative yetzer hara, nefesh bahamis, that enslaves us. So just as physically we were breaking out of bondage and breaking out of slavery and going to freedom, that we wouldn't have to do like back-breaking work for taskmasters, all of this was going on begashmias. On a deeper level, beruchnias, what was going on is that this, we were not on a very high level spiritually in Mitzrayim. Is that something that we know? Right? What does it say? What does Arizal say? What level were we at? It says all the way down at the bottom, 49 levels of impurity, whatever that is, that number. But that's a magical number, 49. And we were all the way down there at the depths of klipa, of negativity, of unholiness. So we were very much enslaved. And on that day, Yetzias Mitzrayim, we were able to break out of all that and run to Hashem and to become Hashem's nation. Now, there's two ways every person experiences this. Every person experiences that there's the goodness within me and the Kedusha within me and the Likus within me, and there is a lot of negative stuff. There's two ways to get rid of negative stuff. What are the two ways? Yes.
To trick the Yetzer Hara, so maybe that's why they said 3 days. It's like the spiritual, they were trying to trick him into thinking that they're not really escaping.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. But let me what you said is 100% correct. I just want to say maybe drop different words, although I'm going to say the same thing that you just did. There's one way, again, a person has a negative midah. Example, anyone?
Anger.
Great. Person has a temper. Obviously, present company totally excluded. But maybe you have a cousin or a cousin's cousin that might suffer from temper, right? So they have a temper. So it's a big issue. That's a big issue. The temper is a very bad midah, and kas is a very bad midah, and something that a person really, really has to work with. Okay, work on, that is. Work on to be able to get out of that bad midah. Okay, how to deal with anger? Let's talk about the Shur moment. Now, this is not a therapy class or anything like that. I just want to bring something up. Wow, I almost lost my temper now. It's good I'm talking about this. How to deal with anger? So there's two ways. One way is that I deal with it so well that I'm able to transform that problem to the point it doesn't exist anymore. Like I learn about it, and I think about it, and I reflect about it, and I meditate on it, and I read books about it, and I go to shiurim about it, and I know the whole chayah, everything. I learn so much about it that I don't have a temper anymore. I never lose my temper because I just have totally graduated that problem. It doesn't exist by me. Is that a great idea?
Yeah.
That's wonderful. That doesn't happen so easily and so quickly, for sure. What's the other way to deal with anger? No, what if I'm not at the level of totally transforming it and I'm not going to be angry anymore? So I'm sitting here and I suddenly get angry at someone says something. What should I do? Right now, what should I do? Should I think about anger and think about what it says and this safer, that safer? What should one do when they feel they're losing their temper?
Push it off.
Close my, drink a cup of water, run around the block, go out of the room, staple my mouth shut. Right? All of those things, they didn't really solve the problem, ultimately. But what did they do?
Distracted.
I'm sorry?
Distracted.
Distracted, tricked, escaped the problem. The problem is still there. I still have an anger management problem. I do. But right now, I evaded it. I didn't let it grab hold of me. I didn't let it control me. I was stronger than it. I ran away. So someone might come and say, big deal, what did you accomplish? You still have an anger management problem. You didn't really accomplish anything great. All you did is just ran away from your problem. You didn't really change it. That's true to a degree. But at the same point, at that moment, I was victorious over my problem because I ran away from it. I didn't let it hold on to me. When a person feels they're losing their temper, the only option is this one. Just imagine a person's losing their temper. So what are you going to say? Oh, I'll bring you 3 Sfarim to read now about anger. Not going to work. I'm not reading Sfarim now. I'm going to scream at that person. Now there's one answer. I close my mouth. I run out of the room. I take a walk around the block. I take a cup of water. Anger was a mushel. You said that mushel, right? That mushel could be for any bad midah, for any bad temptation, for anything that I struggle with. Again, for people who struggle. So anything that a person struggles with, when one is faced with the actual struggle, it's not the time then to transform the struggle. Then is the time to run away from it. Don't let it get me. So another example is, there's a certain place that when I go there, it has a negative, it affects me negatively. Does that make any sense? Maybe a certain place, maybe a certain person, maybe a certain home, maybe a certain block, maybe a certain city, that I know when I'm there, I'm in danger. Baruch Nis. Make sense, such a concept? Right. So what do? Guess what? I don't go there. Now, that's silly. That city, I'm not really I'm sorry?
But what if, like, you need it?
Okay, well, so we'll get to that. But the first thing is, I try to avoid that. Someone says, but you're not really dealing with a problem, you're not transforming the problem, you're not really growing out of it. You're just escaping your problems. Escaping problems is not a bad thing. Escaping problems is the first step to overcoming them. And later, I'll overcome it and transform it. The first step is to escape. So again, whether it's the anger, whether it's going to that place, whatever it is, that's step number one. So, coming back to our question. When the Yidden were in Mitzrayim, they were very deeply in spiritual problems. They were very deeply enslaved to their Yetzirah, to their Nefesh HaBahamas, to their bad midas, to their bad tendencies. So what did they have to do spiritually when they left Mitzrayim? They had to escape their inner bad. Escape their inner struggles. Escape their inner problems. Because spiritually that's what they were doing, that's why physically, how did the story have to play itself out? That they escaped. They had to tell Pari, we're going for 3 days, and then escape. Because the physical story has to be the expression or the reflection of the spiritual story. So being that this was the very beginning of our Avodah as a people, this is called, in Yetzirah Mitzrayim, it's called the Leida of Klal Yisrael, the birth of Klal Yisrael. So because this was spiritually our step one, spiritual step one is, yes, to escape my problems, to not let my problems overcome me, to run away from them. And then they started working on themselves to become better and to transform their problems. But that's step two. And that we celebrate again every year on Pesach. Every year on Pesach, we start from the beginning, recognizing that yes, Hashem created us with struggles. And yes, not necessarily do I have the ability immediately to transform all my struggles so that I don't struggle with them anymore. So if I have my temper management problem, for example, yes, I'm not going to immediately not have a temper anymore, but I always have the ability to escape my temper. That we can always do. Transformation, growing out of problems altogether, so I shouldn't have any more struggles, I shouldn't have any more negative desires, I shouldn't have any more, that's a big avodah, maybe sometime later. The first thing a yid has to know is that I always have the ability to escape from a bad situation. And never to let someone tell us or let ourselves tell us that, hey, big deal, you only escaped. You didn't really deal with the problem. Escaping is step one of getting away from every problem. And that's what Yetzias Mitzrayim was. They were escaping from their problems, from their badness, from their Yetzer Hara, and going into Hashem's embrace. That's what Yetzias Mitzrayim was. So that's what the Alter Rebbe discusses in the end of Perek Lamed Aleph and Tanya. And he uses that to explain another very powerful idea. And that is Simcha. One of the most important things that we're taught about over and over is Ivdu as Hashem b'simcha. Where does it say that? Tehillim. Which chapter? We only have 150 options. Kuf, 100, exactly. Which is in the Mizmer starts with the words Mizmer l'soida, which we also say in Bavin. And there it says, Ivdu es Hashem b'simcha, Yid has to serve Hashem b'simcha with joy. Now, sometimes people get very intellectual, or they say they're getting very honest, and they say, me, joy? Why would I have so much joy? After all, I know that I'm very far from such a great kid. I did that, and I did this, and I had this problem, and that problem, and I have a whole list of problems, and Hashem made me the worst Yitzhara that he ever made in history. And why could I, how could I really be besimcha if I have all of these things that are negative about me? Makes any sense for someone to think that? Again, present company excluded. But theoretically, a person could say, and by the way, is that person necessarily wrong that they have all types of negative things? Could be that they're right. Person's really honest and says, yeah, I know the score. I'm not one of those people that, you know, in Yiddish you say, Merdatzachain, how do you say, I'm not fooling myself. I'm not in denial. Right? Pari threw the kids into the Nile. Mm-hmm. But I'm not in denial. No, sorry about that. But anyways, he says, I'm not in denial, and I know all my problems, and I know all my negative things, and I know this. How could I be besimcha? Pretty decent question. And not just it's a good question, the truth is, it's important for a person to recognize their flaws and their failings. It's important not to be arrogant and to be honest and to be a lev nishbar, like it says in Tehillim also. So it's important to know the score and know our failings and know our flaws and not be arrogant. At the same time, I should be besimcha. So I don't know how. If I do, you know, if you want me to pretend that I'm wonderful and a tzaddik, that's fine. But if you want me to recognize my flaws and failings and this, and then you tell me, but be besimcha anyway, why? Well, that's a great question, and there's more than one answer to that question. But one answer is right here in this chapter of Tanya. And Alter Rebbe says, simple. I know you have flaws, sure I know. But you have the ability every day to escape them. Every single day, you have the ability, every Yid has the ability to wake up in the morning and whatever I am and whatever I was and whatever I did, I can take a siddur and daven. I could learn some Torah, I could do a mitzvah, I could help another Yid. And at that moment, I'm escaped. I've ran away from whatever flaw I might have. I might have those flaws. But right now I'm davening. Right now I'm learning Torah. Right now I'm doing a mitzvah. Right now I'm connecting to Hashem in this amazing way. The flaws don't hold on to me right now because I escaped. I ran away. And the Alter Rebbe goes on and says, beautiful words. He says, you know what's the greatest simcha in the world? The simcha of escape from a bad place. I'll read. There's no greater simcha than running away from galus and captivity. Kimashal ben melech, like the mashal of a prince. Shahaya b'shivya, the prince was in captivity. V'toychein b'veisa asurim. What does toychein mean? Literally grinding. In other words, this great prince was made to do menial labor in jail. Umenuval ba'ashpa. What's that? Wallowing in filth. And that prince, Yatza l'chafshi el beis aviv hamelech. That prince is able to break out of jail, out of the garbage that he's laying in, and go to the house of the king. There's no simcha greater than the escape from a negative place. Says the Alter Rebbe, guess what? That mushal is not a mushal. It's a nimshal. What is the word for mushal in English? Parable or analogy. And what's a nimshal? An analog. Really, I didn't make that up. analogy is the mashal, and the analog is the nimshal. And the Alter Rebbe says that Ben Melech is the neshama within each and every one of us. Every one of us has a Ben Melech, Malchi HaMelech, Matzadosh Baruch Hu. Sometimes called Ben Melech, Bas Melech, different places in Tanya. But that's the neshama. Now that neshama is in a body in a person that might have a lot of flaws, and that neshama might feel like I'm in jail. And I have the ability at every moment, every day, no matter what, to take it out of jail. And to take it away from any flaw that it has and bring it right into Hashem. And again, this every time I open up a siddur, and every time I say a kapitul tilim and do a mitzvah and help a yid and do what I have to do. And that in l'cha simcha g'dayla mizu. So all of this is this. And Alter Rebbe says later, and that is what Yitzias Mitzrayim is all about. That although the yidden still had that badness within them, and that's why they had to escape. And it was only an escape, as we said. But that escape is what's behind this great Yom Tov, the first Yom Tov that we have, the Yom Tov of Pesach, the Yom Tov of Yitzias Mitzrayim, the knowledge and that we remember that we always have at any given moment the ability to make that great escape and to rejoice, be the simcha with that ability that Hashem gives us. That's one tiny idea about Pesach.
Is that like the right of the
Of course. That is the Avoda of a Beinoni. And who's a Beinoni? Everyone. The Avoda of a Beinoni is the Avoda of every Yid. The Avoda of every Yid is whether I'm holding there or not, whether I've graduated all my problems or not. When we graduate all problems, then we're tzaddikim. For that, there's a different sefer. You know, Tanya is called the Sefer Shel Beinonim, right? Do you have a Chana Yehuda class in Sefer Shel Tzaddikim too?
It was burned.
What, the class? So you're right. That there's the Alter Rebbe wrote a book of Beinim. He also wrote a book called Sefer Shel Tzaddikim. And then someone paid the Alter Rebbe a visit. Who was that? The Shpaler Zayde. You heard of the Shpaler Zayde? He's another who's a colleague of the Alter Rebbe, disciple of the Magid. And the Shpaler Zayde made a special trip to Liozhne, to the Alter Rebbe. And he said, I heard, or I saw, that you wrote a Sefer Shel Tzaddikim. And you should know that the world is not worthy for this Sefer. And I will ascend to heaven with it. And he left. He went back to Shpola. Short while later, a fire broke out in Ryozhna, and that sefer was burnt up, and the Shpola Zayda passed away in his city of Shpola at the same time. That's what he told Alter Rebbe, I'm going to go to heaven with that sefer. So it seems that that sefer is not necessary for us. For us is necessary the sefer of Beinonim, which is really the sefer of escape, of helping us and teaching us how, yes, we might have these different flaws and things. Doesn't matter. We have the ability to escape it every day of the year, and that ability is given to us when we're born, and we're born on Pesach. The Leida of Klal Yisrael, Yitzias Mitzrayim, is that ability to escape. That is one point from that period of Amud Aleph. Okay, we have a few minutes left. I can say a little more? Okay.
Timeless.
The other point, you mentioned Perek Mem Zayin, but I'll start from Perek Mem Vav. I'll go back a little bit. That is, there is a pasuk in Mishlei. Which pasuk in Mishlei am I going to say? No, that's not a pasuk in Mishlei. The pasuk in Mishlei is, Kimayim haponim laponim kain lev ha'odam el ha'odam. What does that mean? Kimayim haponim laponim. Just like water reflects a face that's shown into the water. If you put your face over water and it's a clear sunny day, you should see a reflection of your face. So kemayim hapanim leponim, like the reflection of the way water reflects a face. Kein lev ha'adam, a heart of a person reflects another heart. Which means that if you feel very much, if you feel strong, positive feelings for someone else, they will reflect those feelings back towards you. When you show Ahavas Yisrael to someone, that naturally should cause them to feel that a reciprocal Ahava to you as well. And that's the idea. K'mayim ha'panim l'panim kein lev ha'adam l'adam. That's a pasuk from Mishlei written by Shlomo HaMelech. What does the Alter Rebbe do with that pasuk in Tanya? He says that we can use that to fulfill one very great mitzvah that all of us have, that we talk about every day in davening, the mitzvah of Ahavas Hashem. We have a mitzvah, like we say in the beginning of Shema, Va'ahavta es Hashem alekecha, to love Hashem. Now for some people, that's like the easiest mitzvah that there is. They're just like overflowing with love for Hashem when they wake up in the morning. And for some people, that's like a mitzvah that they struggle with. How do I awaken it? How do I feel it? Some people feel that it's easier for them to have ahavas cake. Whatever it is, but never, whatever your feeling is, it's a mitzvah. And it's a tremendous avodah to work on it. We work on it during davening, and we work on having ahavas Hashem. How does one work on ahavas Hashem? There's more than one way to that, obviously. But one of the ways is the way of kamayim haponim alaponim. By reflecting and meditating and thinking about the great ahava that Hashem shows us. And the more we think about and we focus on how much ahava Hashem shows us, that naturally inspires us to feel a reciprocal ahava back to Hashem. That's the idea. Kamayim haponim lepanim, just like water reflects the face. So the heart reflects the heart. So when we think about Hashem's ahava to us, that should awaken within us an ahava back to Hashem. Where did Hashem exhibit his ahava to us in this unlimited and unprecedented way? Was the story of Pesach, Yetzias Mitzrayim. Going back to Pesach, that's where we're, you know, it's a couple days before Pesach, obviously. And what happens, and I go back to what I said before, we were a slave nation. We were nobodies, we were nothings, we were slaves, and we were low physically, and we were low spiritually, and we were downtrodden, we were nothing. And Hashem comes to us, and He takes us out of Mitzrayim. And He doesn't just take us out of Mitzrayim, He raises us up to the highest level possible. He gives us the Torah, He gives us His own Torah and His own mitzvahs. And the Alter Rebbe, there in Perek Memvav, describes it with the most beautiful mashal possible. And he talks about, I have to read the words because it can't be said better than it's written. He says, any two people that if person A shows ahava to person B, that will make person B feel back. But will feel ahava back. In other words, A shows the person a feeling of love, so that brings the person B, feels to person A a feeling of love. Now, says the Alter Rebbe, alachas kamo v'kama amash morso, im melech godel v'rom, a great and awesome king, mara ahavase hagdolo v'ha'atsuma, shows his tremendous and great love, le'ish hegyet v'nivze ushfal anoshim. So the great glorious king, the king of the entire empire, shows a tremendous feeling of love to this lowly simpleton, umenuvol, who's dirty, mutal ba'ashpa, again, wallowing in filth. I'll never forget, when I learned this Perek Tanya the first time, I was, 15, and our mashpia in yeshiva was teaching us this Perek. This has got to be Tavshin Mem Test, 1989, 30 years ago. Right? Does it make sense? All right. 19, Tavshin Mem Test, now it's Ayin Test, 30 years ago. So we're learning this Tanya. Now, we learned that in New York, over here in Kamenetz. And then, that was in the time when every day for Shacharis, we would go to 770 and daven with the Rebbe's minion, and we'd daven three times there. The Rebbe was very part, that's what we lived every day. So, every Monday and Thursday, or Sunday and Thursday, depending, the Rebbe would go to the Ohel of his father-in-law, the Friedrich Rebbe. And the way the Rebbe would go is the Rebbe had his car, and in front of it was a police car, usually in front, and a police car in the back, or another car, or a siren, whatever. And it was a whole very beautiful, very malchustic entourage. The Rebbe would go to the Ohel, and they'll sit and stand on the sides and watch, and get brachas, or whatever it is. So our Mashpia described this to us, and he used this, sometimes a mashal sticks in your mind forever. He described for us, he says, so imagine you're standing there on the side, and the Rebbe's entourage rolls by, the Rebbe's car in the middle, in front of the police car, back this, and they're driving down Kingston Avenue. Now, on Kingston Avenue then, and probably today too, there are unfortunately some homeless people who live there. So one of them lived in a specific opening of a shop. We all knew who he was. We passed him a few times a day. And very nebach, I don't know if he's Jewish or not Jewish, dirty, filthy, smell, a person nebach, no home, no nothing. So this mashpia is describing to us, and the Rebbe's entourage is passing by. Suddenly all the cars stop. The Rebbe comes out of his car and he walks over to the homeless person and he brings him into his car with him. He says, come with me. He brings him to the car, and then they go back to 770 and he brings him into his room and he talks to him and he sits with him and he gives him new clothing. So that's how he described us, this mashal in Tanya, of the Melech Ram, the great king, coming down to the person who is filthy and dirt and this, and he brings him to him. The Yerid Ilav Min Koim Kvoidev. He descends to him from the king's palace, Im kol sorov yachdov, with all of his ministers. Umekimai, he picks him up. Umeirimai me ashpasai. He uplifts him out of the garbage. Umachnisai leheichalai heichal hamelech. The great king takes this lowly, filthy person and brings him into the heichal hamelech, the king's chamber. Cheder lefnim mecheder. Room within, chamber within chamber. Makoim she'en kol eved visar nichnas lesham. None of the great servants or ministers of the king is allowed to go in there. Umisyached imoy sham biyichud vikiruv amiti. The king just spends time uniquely with this person. V'chibuk v'nishuk, he hugs him and kisses him. B'chalei v'nefesh. What is that person going to feel towards this king? How much thanks, how much appreciation, how much love will that simple person who until a minute ago was homeless in the dirt and the filth and now is the king's best buddy, being hugged and kissed by the king in the king's chamber. Alachas v'kama v'kama shetis'er memela ha'ava kefula mechupelas. The level of love, double and doubly double, believe ha'hegyu d'shval ha'noshim hazeh el nefesh ha'melech. This simpleton, how much love will he feel to the king? Bi'iskashrus ha'nefesh mamish. With a total connection of the soul, mi'leiv ha'nefesh mi'umka d'liba le'inketz. But what if this lowly guy is just not an emotional type of person? Will he still feel that love for the king? Says the Alter Rebbe. Va'afim libay kelev ha'evan. Even if this person has a heart made out of stone, figuratively, hames yimes, it will dissolve. V'hoya l'mayim, it will be like water. V'tishtapich nafshir k'mayim b'klois ha'nefesh mamash. His heart will just melt and dissolve in his la'avas hamelech with the love for his king. That's the mashal. V'hineh k'chol hadvarim ha'elah k'chol hachizoyen hazeh. Like everything I just told you in this whole picture, the gadol yoser me'oid b'kifli kiflayim, much greater, doubly and much greater. Le'in keitz, asa lanu elokeinu. That's what Hashem did to us, the Klal Yisrael. Ki l'gdula se'im cheker. Hashem's greatness is beyond any king. V'yum emalei kalam v'b'sayv kalam, and he fills all world and transcends all world, and Hashem goes off into the Zayir and the Arizal and whatever. I'm skipping a bunch of lines. And none of the malachim really know where Hashem is. V'kulam shoyelim ayim ekoim kevoydei, we say it in Kedusha. All the malachim say, where is Hashem? Nobody really, none of the greatest malachim really know where Hashem is and what he is. Ki hiniach HaKadosh Baruch Hu asel yonim asel hachtonim, v'lo bachar bekulam. All the great malachim and all the angels and the srafim and this, Hashem said, they're all great. That's not where he decided to choose. Who did he choose? His nation. Am Yisrael. He came down to Mitzrayim, which is the lowliest place of the world, to a nation that was enslaved there. A place of impurity, a place of dirt, filth. And he didn't send malachim, by the way, like we say in the Haggadah. Lo yalidei malach, v'lo yalidei chulu, el HaKadosh Baruch Hu, b'kvoidei uva'atzmei yorad l'shom. Hashem comes himself all the way down to Mitzrayim. Kidei lekarvam elov, in order to bring them close to him, b'kiruv v'yichud amiti, and the ultimate closeness and the ultimate oneness, b'skashrus ha'nefesh mamash, connecting to us totally, that ultimate connection, b'bechinas nishikim, with the divine kiss from Hashem, which is to speak the words of Hashem, ledaber dvar Hashem zu alocha, when we speak the words of Hashem, v'yisdakus rucha berucha, connecting to us in spirit, hasogas ha-Torah, knowing the Torah, v'gam b'vchinas chibuk, he hugs us, through the kiyum ha-mitzvus maisis, through every mitzvah that we do. So all of this mashal, says the Alter Rebbe, of the great king and the simpleton, and the king coming down to the simpleton, we're bringing him up to him, that's what Hashem does to each and every one of us. And in fact, every time we do a mitzvah, every time, thank you, every time we do a mitzvah, we say, Baruch Atah Hashem, excuse me, Asher kiddishanu b'mitzvayisot. What does the word kiddishanu mean? Asher, we say Baruch Hashem, Hashem Asher Kiddushanu b'mitzvaysav. He sanctified us with his mitzvahs. Where else do we use that lashon Kiddushanu? When by a chasana, what does the chasana tell the kala? What makes the kiddushin? Hareyat mikudeshes li. The ultimate union is mikudeshes. Says the Alter Rebbe, every time you do a mitzvah, that's like a chasan being mikadesh akala, Hashem being mikadesh us. That's Hashem saying, you're mine and I'm yours in doing this mitzvah, and in learning this Torah, and in saying this prayer to Hillel, and in giving this tzedakah, and in doing this achnasas orchem. That's kiddushanu b'mitzvah. V'zeo shekasuv v'hiyisem li kedoshim. Hashem says, you're mine. Ki kodesh ani Hashem. Ve'avdil eschem min ha'amim liyois li. I have separated you from all the nations to become mine. Just like that unique relationship of a chasan kal, of a husband and wife, where they become separate from everyone else, they're each other's. And Hashem says, we're each other's when we do a mitzvah. And that, says the Alter Rebbe, is what Yitzias Mitzrayim is all about. And that's what Shleima Melech means when he says, Kamayim haponim laponim kein leiv ha'odam el ha'odam. That when we think about, when we reflect on the tremendous ahava and the tremendous chesed that Hashem did by Yitzias Mitzrayim to each and every one of us individually, and the more we think about that, the more we're able to feel that tremendous ahava back to Hashem and recognize He gave away, He came and devoted Himself exclusively to us. So what that gives us the ability is to decide that we have that same ability and that same schus of devoting ourselves to Him and making that union a complete union together. And that is specifically on the night of Pesach, but then we have that mitzvah to carry that throughout the entire year. And that's why every day of the year there's a mitzvah of Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim. But Pesach is the time when we're given the koyach for the entire year. Just like everything that we do has its special time, and from that special time we draw koyach for the whole year. Take for example tshuva. When is the time for tshuva? So Yom Kippur is the time, and from Yom Kippur we take the koyach to have tshuva every day of the year. Simcha Seira or Purim is the times like the of Simcha, and from there we take for the entire year. Everything has its moment. That's when the energy comes for the year. Pesach moment is Yitzias Mitzrayim. That Hashem gave the ability to a people who are as lowly as possible, says, pick them up and says, you're mine. That happens every year on Pesach. So whenever a person might feel, I'm low, I'm far, I'm difficult, I'm this, I'm that, I'm the other, could be right, could be true, until Pesach. Pesach, as Hashem says, I don't really care. I'm coming right down there, right to you, and I want to pick you up and take you to me. And every day of your life, and every day of the year, you have that ability to wake up in the morning and say, I don't care who I am or what I am or what I was or what I struggle with. I have that ability to escape, to go straight into Hashem's lap and be kiddushanu b'mitzvayso, be mikudeshes to Hashem, be one with Hashem, and fulfill that mission that Hashem entrusted us, each and every one of us, with, and gives us the koyach to do, both for ourselves as well as for the world around us, make ourselves better people, make the world around us better, a better place, and a place that should be fit ultimately for Hashem to move into this world permanently with the coming of Mashiach. May it be this year, and we'll have the Karban Pesach, Erev Pesach, in Yerushalayim, with Mashiach Tzidkenu, the Beis HaMikdash HaShlishi.